Cavalcade of Kings. William and Mary. The cavalcade of kings rides on. James II draws rein and stands watching with silent resentment the approach of two of England's greatest monarchs, William III and Mary, who was the daughter of James II and Mary of Modena, whilst William III was the son of William II of Orange, his mother being Mary, daughter of Charles I. Charles II had sold England to France, and James II had betrayed her to Rome, and the people had at last reached the limit of their endurance. Pressure was brought to bear, and Parliament sent its commissioners to Holland to invite William and Mary to become the joint sovereigns of England. The offer was accepted, and after a stormy voyage, William landed at Torbay with an army composed of 15,000 Dutch and English troops on November the 5th, 1688. News of the prince's landing was brought to King James II at Whitehall on the 16th of November. In a furious rage, he summoned Lord Churchill, the commander-in-chief of the English army.
Came the yellow dog of a Dutchman to land an army on British soil unmolested? Answer me, Churchill, or by heaven I'll have your head.
Sire, I do not fear for my head, for the power and authority to strike it from my neck is no longer in your hands.
Insolent dog! Hast forgotten I am James Stuart, King of England?
James Stuart, yes, but a king no longer.
This is treason!
Nay, it is the truth. Parliament and the people have reached the limit of their endurance. You've driven them too hard and too far. At last they've thrown off the yoke of bondage.
Bah! 7 hours' sleep will make them change their minds.
In 7 hours, Prince William and Princess Mary will be at the gates of London.
What has the Dutchman and that white-faced baggage Mary to do with the matter?
The prince and princess have been invited by Parliament to rule England as joint sovereign.
I'll never do that whilst I live. I'll fight William and his cursed Dutch guards to the bitter end. And when I've vanquished him, I'll cut his heart from his body and nail it high up on the tower as a warning to others. Get ye gone, Churchill. Marshal your troops and concentrate on Salisbury. I'll teach this yellow dog a lesson he'll never forget.
Sire, a wise general always knows when he is beaten. The troops are with William to a man. The nobles are flocking to his banner. Even yesterday, Prince George, the husband of Anne, your daughter, joined William's forces. And I...
Yes, and you, Churchill?
I shall give my loyalty and support to the man whom I know will lift England and her people from the deep pit of despair into which your obstinacy, cruelty, and selfishness has cast her.
Then I stand deserted by all.
You have yourself to blame. There is one last service I will perform for you, sire.
How very generous of you, my Lord Churchill.
You can please yourself whether you accept my offer or not, sire. It is a matter of indifference to me.
And what is this service, my Lord?
Safe conduct for yourself, your wife, and family from England to the continent.
I will not flee from an imaginary danger.
The danger is very real, sire. When William and Mary arrive at the gates of the city, there is no knowing what the people will do to James Stuart, a man who is responsible for all their suffering.
You really mean my life is in danger?
Look ye down into the street, sire. That crowd. Think ye they are lovingly disposed towards ye? In truth, I fear if ye were to show yourself at the gates of the palace, they'd tear ye limb from limb. Best take advantage of my offer, sire. 'Tis your only hope of safety.
I will. But one of these days I'll return and take back that which is rightfully mine.
James escaped with his family to France and became the honored guest of King Louis XIV. Soon after, William and Mary were crowned joint monarchs of England. The adherents of James held out for some time in Scotland and Ireland, but the fall of Dundee at Killiecrankie ended the activities in Scotland, and the fall of Londonderry and Limerick and the battles of the Boyne and Aghrim ended the trouble in Ireland. At the moment, we find William and Mary discussing affairs of state with Bishop Burnet.
My Lord Bishop, I grow very weary of the debates and quarrels which rage between the Whigs and the Tories. The king has rapidly restored order. He is a hard-working man. He has chosen his ministers freely, as he hates the notion of being king of one particular party, and therefore has tried to divide office between the chief Whigs and Tories. But his efforts in the cause of peace and good government are being frustrated by his ministers, who insist upon quarreling fiercely with each other.
There are many others who support his majesty. Aye, there are hundreds of men who would willingly die for him.
Yes, my lord bishop. But at any moment they will swing round like the weathercock. And those who cry all hosanna today, tomorrow will perhaps cry crucify him. I came to England with a heart that was full of compassion for her long-suffering people. I swore a solemn oath to restore to them the peace they crave by giving them good laws and sane government. But the very men whom I have chosen to help me, and whom I have counted upon to support me in this difficult task, are cutting away the foundations of the great structure of national security I am trying to erect with the axes of their own spiteful spleen and selfish personal issues.
My son, I have tried to reason with these disturbers of the peace, but to no avail. The Whigs support William and Mary, but the Tories wish to restore James with the regency. Others declare that Queen Mary alone is the rightful heir to the throne, and that her husband is an interloper.
Stop, my lord bishop. Such words are an insult and a humiliation to my husband, who has done so much for this ungrateful country. And I bid you publicly declare in my name that the cruelest injury that could be done me is to set me up as a competitor of my husband. And no person who takes such a course shall I regard as my true friend.
You are very wise, my daughter. With your permission, sire, I will retire and put the Queen's commands into execution at once.
Perhaps it is as well, my lord bishop. For whilst this bickering continues, the object for which we strive will be frustrated.
I will attend to the matter immediately, sire. Very well, your majesties. God keep you.
At last we are alone. Oh, William, my dear, why are they so ungrateful? Why do they so willfully misunderstand and mistrust your goodness?
Hush, beloved. All will be well. I have yet to break down the barriers of prejudice which stand between the English and the Dutch. When I have accomplished this, when I have proven myself a loyal and faithful servant of the people, then will I reap my reward in the love and trust which I know their generous hearts will shower upon me. And when I have won their affection, I shall be able to carry out my great ambition.
And what is your great ambition, beloved?
To form a coalition between Holland, England, and Spain against our common enemy, France. No, my sweet, let us forget affairs of state for a while. There are domestic problems which call for immediate adjustment.
You refer to my sister, Anne.
Yes. Mary, what is the cause of your quarrel with her?
Oh, William, she is completely dominated by Lady Marlborough and her husband, the Duke. They think for her, speak for her, plan for her, and Anne's household is ruled entirely by this scheming woman. Ever since we returned from Hampton Court, Anne has avoided being alone with me.
Oh, beloved, don't you think you are both a pair of foolish girls? Come now, dear. Be generous with your sister. These family quarrels are detestable.
William, I hate to tell you this, but I'm forced to do so. Anne has been secretly making attempts to get a revenue settled upon herself.
Your sister is the direct heiress to the throne if we should die childless. And as such, is justly entitled to a revenue. How much does she ask?
£50,000, as well as a settlement of all her debts.
Hmm. I will commission Lord Shrewsbury to attend to the matter at once.
But, William, this is all Sarah Marlborough's doing. She's forcing Anne to claim this money in order to get her share of it.
Oh, Mary, it matters not to me if Anne throws it into the Thames upon receipt of it. Her claim is just. She is the heiress apparent to the throne and must be maintained in a manner as befits her rank.
William, I...
Oh, not another word, Mary. I have decided to grant the money to your sister.
Must I remind you, William, that we are joint monarchs?
No, Mary. Nor is there any need for me to remind you that Parliament has decreed that while we both live, I alone shall govern the country.
Queen Mary died of smallpox in 1694, leaving behind her, as her memorial, the Greenwich Hospital, a refuge for sailors disabled in the service of their country. It is now 1702, and we find William riding with a party of friends at Hampton Court. They're discussing the insolent actions of King Louis of France.
Louis will have to be taught another lesson, it seems, Albemarle.
He has long been the enemy of our peace, sire. All these years he has sheltered James Stuart. I not only sheltered him, but aided and abetted him in his nefarious schemes to regain the English throne. The invasion which failed, the plot to assassinate your majesty which also failed, no doubt are his work.
Aye, and now that James is dead, Louis has the audacity to proclaim James' son, of whose parentage there is grave doubts, King of England.
Such insufferable insolence is not to be borne, sir.
Oh, have no fear, good Albemarle. This time we'll fight to a finish, for I mean to secure the Protestant succession which will be the safeguard of the liberties of the English people. Even as I welded the alliance that stemmed the overwhelming preponderance of France. And I thank God that at last I have roused England to a sense of her place amongst the nations of the world.
Once England was the paid hireling of France. Now...
Now she holds the balance of power in Europe, eh? We have established religious toleration and the freedom of the press. And we have also established public credit on a sound basis and... Quiet, sir! Quiet, laddie, quiet, sir!
Oh, wretched animal, plunging and rearing.
Quiet,
if he stumbles on one of those cursed molehills, he'll unseat you, sire. Quickly, the king has fallen.
Sir, are you hurt?
Oh, my wretched collarbone is broken, I think. Oh, attend me, good friends, to the palace. And ponder well upon the puniness of kings, for it has taken but a miserable molehill to lay William of England low.